TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Bioweapons and Biowarfare. Ed Hammond. This program on bioweapons is a bit frightening and recorded under difficult circumstances. Please don't be turned off by bad sound. The information is important for several reasons. Recent developments in biotechnology and genetic engineering open up huge new possibilities for creating and duplicating pathogens. Recent discoveries of brain function and the role of bioregulators and neurotransmitters give the designers of bioweapons unprecedented power over human behavior. Also, the U.S. government is undermining the completion of a global biosafety protocol. The U.S. is accusing Iraq, Iran, North Korea, Libya, Sudan, and Syria of operating clandestine biological weapons programs while conducting the extensive new biological weapons programs that you will hear about now. Ed Hammond is co-director of the Sunshine Project. You can find supporting documents to this broadcast on their website, www.sunshine-project.org. Here's Ed Hammond.
There's a whole other class, and a lot of these are really new, of natural chemicals which can be biological weapons. A lot of them, like bioregulators, particularly neurotransmitters, are chemicals or chemicals produced in the body, or mimics that are produced artificially of chemicals that are produced in the body, which can cause certain catastrophes inside of you or inside of an animal, or can cause you to behave in a different way. The reason why there are a lot more bioregulators are a big concern now is that we've only really just started to identify a lot of the ways that brain chemistry works in the past 6, 7, 8 years. And now suddenly we have the capacity, which didn't exist before in a lot of ways, to sort of look at the brain and say the transmission of this chemical or the presence of this chemical in a certain level in the brain will induce this kind of reaction in a person. For the past 5 years, one of the most important activities sort of on the international scene has been an attempt to develop a verification protocol to the major international agreement on biological weapons, the Vision International Agreement, which a large number of countries are party to, which says we will not develop offensive biological weapons. Problem is, there's no way to enforce it. There's no law to send people here to inspect this, to inspect that, to try to figure out if there's compliance. They've almost reached agreement on a compliance text, which is not exactly perfect, but it's a step in the right direction. However, it appears in the last few weeks that in addition to dropping out of the ABM treaty and the other actions that the Bush administration has taken, that they are backing away from the development of this verification protocol. There was a major conference on what are called non-lethal weapons, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in the presentation, and there were some guys from the U.S. Marine Corps who were there, and they called for a renegotiation of the Biological Weapons Convention because there are certain kinds of biological agents we'll talk about, especially riot control agents and non-lethal weapons, which they would like to be able to use, and which currently, under most interpretations of the treaty, are prohibited. What happened was when the U.S. offensive biological weapons apparatus was broken up was that some of them broke into NIH, some of them broke into AMRID, which is the Army's defensive program, and some of them went into the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Traditionally, and if you talk to like the arms control experts, what they're concerned about are these big army versus army conflicts, like the Soviet bombers coming across or the ICBMs coming across loaded with some sort of awful disease. Although that type of warfare remains a concern, really with the rise of biotechnology, the primary concern now is that governments themselves, including our own and some others, are going to be tempted themselves to sabotage the international controls on biological weapons because there's a lot of temptation to be able to use biotechnology in ways to manipulate people's behavior. So the three primary areas of concern that I was going to talk about are sort of three cases. The first is what you asked about, and that's Colombia and the drug war. The U.S., with some support from the U.K., and interestingly enough, the U.N. Drugs Agency, have developed pathogenic fungi. They're very nasty plant diseases. Some of the work has taken place in Asia. Most of the work has taken place in the United States, which attack marijuana, opium poppy, and coca, the source of cocaine. And there's been a lot of political action on this lately because it came very close to being used in Colombia last year, or would be being used this year. The second type of development, and this is another one which is pretty hot right now, and that's that really with genetic engineering you can create a bacteria or a small, probably unicellular organism which will eat just about anything. So if you think of any material that's in this room or any material that's in your car or any material that's in your house, you can probably build a GMO which will specifically digest that material. Okay. The third area are riot control agents. There are a lot of new ways. Pepper gas and tear gas are relatively old approaches to keeping civil order. And there's a lot of stuff that either exists or is on the drawing board, which are potentially much better ways of keeping people in their place. I mean, of course, it's natural, especially after Seattle, to think of ourselves. In fact, a lot of the work that's done in the United States on new types of non-lethal weapons, and just thinking in general where the types of conflicts are in the world where biological weapons might be used, is that you really have to look in the political South. Secondly, it probably can't be overemphasized enough that what happened to the United States in Somalia was really, really important. If you remember that they attempted to capture a couple of warlords and it turned out to be a disaster for the U.S. Marine Corps. And again, when the U.S. Marine Corps was in Somalia, they were confronted with huge crowds of women and children and men who were very angry, some of whom were armed, some of whom weren't, and they did not know what to do. How on earth am I going to control this crowd and control the physical territory without killing all these people? That's actually a really major analysis that's pushing in the direction of developing new riot control agents or new agents to either quell crowds or to control areas. This was a proposal which is still alive and kicking, which stems from work that was initially sponsored by the CIA in the early 80s to try to develop microbes or pathogens which would eliminate drug crops. And coming out of that research, it became above the board research several years ago in the Department of Agriculture. And the leader of it was a guy named David Sands, who's a professor of plant pathology at Montana State, who has a very tight relationship with the drug enforcement people in the U.S. government. And David Sands had developed a fungus called Fusarium oxysporum, which is reasonably effective at killing coca plants. Again, if you recall what happened in Peru when they shot down the missionaries by accident, this is kind of indicative of that kind of relationship, which we particularly like in drug enforcement, and that's to hire basically mercenaries to do our work for us. What these guys said, well, you know, this really isn't a biological weapon. This is law enforcement, right? We're not attacking these people. We're not, you know, this is not a military offensive. This is law enforcement. Well, you know, we countered that, of course, it's a war that's going on in Colombia, and in fact, this is a biological weapons attack. And there are a whole series of dangers with the fungus. It was not tested on wild relatives of the coca. There are about over 200 wild relatives of coca around the world. A lot of them are concentrated in Colombia. Several of them are endangered in Colombia. In other words, if this fungus was sprayed widely, it would probably attack endangered species or other relatives of coca, which have various roles in the ecosystem. Also, when they did their own growth chamber test, this is a laboratory type test, it killed things that were completely unrelated to coca. Another aspect of it is, of course, that there these, you know, marijuana, coca, or opium poppy are not just used for illegal drugs, right? They're used for a whole range of purposes. And in the case of coca, since we're talking about that one a lot, there are a huge number of indigenous people across the Amazon that use it as a medicine. It plays a very integral part in a lot of indigenous cultures. This fungus has absolutely no way of differentiating between coca that's going to be grown for cocaine production and coca, which would be used by indigenous people. The stuff was so virulent that it actually, when they field trialed it in Hawaii in the 1950s and early 60s, when the Coca-Cola company got really scared that the commies were going to take over the world supply of coca in South America, they established a plantation of coca in Hawaii, which now belongs to USDA, which is where they do all the experimentation of this. And when they went to try to test it in Hawaii, the stuff just jumped out of the research plots, and now they have this apparently terminal infestation of fusarium in Hawaii. In the early 90s, USDA, they isolated the virulence genes out of some of these strains of fusarium. They started down the path of trying to build super GMO fusarium. The particular strain that they wanted to release in Colombia now, they claim, is not a product of genetic engineering. We have some questions. The professor is a specialist in mutagenesis and directed mutagenesis, the idea of trying to create an organism that you know, suits your needs by inducing mutations and inducing sort of an evolutionary path for it. So in the case in the United States, they've done the experiments and they have built GMO strains of it. They claim that the one they wanted to release was not. In Asia, where the research is being done on another fungus called Pleospora, which would attack opium poppy, the head researcher there, who formerly developed biological weapons for the Soviet Union, and the facility where it's being done is a former Soviet biological weapons facility, said on camera that he would have no problem at all genetically engineering it to make it more potent. Let me move on to the anti-materiel microbes. Basically, you can create a GMO to eat just about any material. This guy right here is sort of the leading pusher of this type of weapon, former Los Alamos researcher who was a Marine Corps colonel who spent a lot of time building these bugs. A lot of the work on the GMO materiel eaters is done by the Navy. This is a new Navy patent. I think it was just issued January 30th. This is on a GMO microbe which eats polyurethane. So if you release this GMO microbe in around polyurethane, it will digest it, and it will digest it quickly.
You are listening to a program on bioweapons and biowarfare. The speaker is Ed Hammond, co-director of the Sunshine Project, a watchdog group on biowarfare. The patent he just mentioned was issued in January of 2001. My apologies for the bad sound quality. His talk was recorded under difficult circumstances. But this material is so rare and of such concern that I decided to present it on radio anyway. Ed Hammond.
If you're a biosafety person, right, if you know anything about biosafety, the notion of like cutting loose a asphalt-eating microbe, you know, or dropping it from a bomb, you know, is just a biosafety absolute nightmare. You know, what are you going to do? How are you going to contain these guys? Let me talk a little bit about one of the military reasons why they're interested in this. If you remember in when we were bombing Serbia, when they knocked out the power grid in Serbia, there's a lot of work that's been done on these what are called less lethal weapons, or soft bombs. And in the case in Serbia, they used them, and it was a kind of bomb which spools out these big long strands which short out electric grid. So they'll drop this bomb over an electric grid or over a substation, and it'll short out the electricity over a huge area. And the argument is that, well, we didn't have to bomb all these people into oblivion and kill all these people. Instead, we just shorted out their electric grid. In the same sort of way, the work on the GMO microbes is proceeding, because the rationale is that, well, we're not going to have to bomb all of Saddam Hussein's tanks and all of his soldiers into oblivion. Instead, what we'll do is we could release a GMO microbe on them, which would turn all of their rubber tank tracks into mud, right? And so then we don't have to kill them all. This is one of the issues on which the Marine Corps has called for the Biological Weapons Convention to be updated, or for it to be renegotiated, and that would be to allow the use of organisms like this in warfare. And as you can see, they're already developing them as defense But that's a problem that plagues all across biological warfare research. You can do anything. Basically, you can't tell the difference between an offensive and a defensive microbe until it's on you.
Certainly by using genetic methods, you can make all sorts of diseases more lethal, more difficult to detect. That's actually one of the bigger concerns. By tinkering very slightly with the genes of a disease, you can make it have different symptoms, right? And if it has different symptoms, a doctor can't diagnose it. And the doctor can't diagnose it, then it's very difficult to treat. And even more than the lethality factor in biological weapons, altering the behavior and way that the organism attacks you is something that's very worrying. All right, now we're going to the most fun one here, and that's riot control agents. This is the actual doctrine of the U.S. military right now with respect to the development of non-lethal riot control agents. Not all of them are biological. Some of them are chemical, some of them are kinetic weapons. They depend on physical force. This is the guy who's actually in charge of it. What's called the Joint Non-Lethal Weapons Directorate is a Pentagon. It encompasses all the armed forces, which works a lot on the riot control agents. This is from the segment of the Marine Corps, which is they have utter disdain for international arms control agreements, and this is another quote from this guy. We must explore several specific non-lethal counter-personnel capabilities. First, we will develop non-lethal capabilities for crowd control. This will include the means to influence the behavior and activities of a potentially hostile crowd, as well as a rioting mob. That's the official doctrine of the military at this point. What Colonel Fenton, the head of the Joint Non-Lethal Weapons Directorate, says is, I would like a magic dust that would put everyone in the building asleep, combatants and non-combatants. John Alexander, the retired Los Alamos researcher and Marine colonel, says, it is argued that some non-lethal weapons violate established treaties. The underlying assumption is that these treaties will be honored by the signatories. We know this is fallacious thinking. Nonetheless, many academically minded policymakers follow such head in the sand reasoning. So in other words, screw any international conventions that we belong to, we should proceed with the development of these weapons. And then finally, we were shocked listening to NPR the other morning, and the quote there was from an editorial in NPR by a professor at Franklin Marshall College in Pennsylvania, and he says, this is with respect to Colonel Fenton's work, the guy that wants magic dust to put everybody to sleep. He says, let's spend some tax dollars on a non-lethal weapon that can immobilize a bad guy with laughter or a crushing sense of his own inadequacy. Imagine a shootout where instead of bleeding, the loser burst out singing Funky Town or the national anthem of Portugal. Godspeed, Colonel Fenton. May the next generation of your active denial system kindle not just our hides, but our imaginations. Kindling our hides it was an editorial on NPR. Kindling our hides is a reference to a non-biological non-lethal they have. It's a truck that is mounted with a microwave weapon that heats up your skin and repels riots by basically aiming basically a different version of the microwave that you have in your kitchen, except they point it at you. Not all sort of bioregulator type weapons are non-lethal. A lot of them are lethal. You could use them to permanently disable or kill someone. A lot of them, because they're natural chemicals which occur in the brain or the body otherwise, are very difficult to detect. They might have effects that are similar to nerve agents. They are particularly lend themselves to covert operations because a very small quantity of a neurotransmitter that's delivered appropriately is capable of killing someone, and there's not going to be any chemical in that person's body which would not otherwise be there. And the lethal aspect of them could eventually rival mass weapons like anthrax if it's not controlled. We're going to focus on the non-lethals because I see those as being a more imminent threat. There's a wide variety of types of candidates for non-lethal crowd control weapons. A lot of the research and a lot of the types of knowledge that are necessary to create these things is really tightly linked to psychopharmacology. We're talking about sort of military-grade Prozac here is a good way of thinking of it.
a lot of these are not just military, but can be used probably, as you've deduced, in law enforcement. To show you how serious this is, the non-biologicals, new kinds of pepper gas stuff and new kinds of kinetic weapons that are very recently developed have been used by the U.S. Army in Kosovo and part of the KFOR and the peacekeeping operation there. They've been deployed, and this is the actual newsletter from the Joint Non-Lethal Weapons Directorate congratulating themselves on the fact that some of the weapons they helped develop were deployed against rioting Serbs in Kosovo. On the biotechnical side, the kinds of things that we're talking about are malodorants, stink bombs, basically, calmative agents. Some of the kinds of these would be drugs like ketamine or BZ, which is a very powerful hallucinogen, which was weaponized by the United States in the 60s. You remember a few years ago when they suddenly overran a bunch of the pockets in Bosnia? There are allegations that they used BZ on those last few pockets in Bosnia on the defenders. There's an increasing ability through our understanding of brain chemistry and how the signaling works inside of your brain, parallel with the development of computer technology and the ability to design proteins to fit a particular purpose and receptor that we've identified in the brain. That's a whole other area. Another type would be things that make you feel good. Our feeling is that this might be an alley which would be researched more than you might think, because if you use BZ on a crowd, you're likely to have a bunch of people freak out. If you make them feel good, it's going to be a lot more CNN compatible. About the malodorants I think are very close to being actually used. This is a patent issued earlier this month to a former Marine Corps commander on a variety of types of stink bombs, malodorant agents that are derived from chemicals isolated from feces. These are slides from the Army Edgewood Chemical Biological Facility, which is near Aberdeen, Maryland, where they're testing the malodorants. This is some poor woman that volunteered to do this. One thing that you might want to do if you wanted to disperse a crowd, you would want to panic. This is a readily formulatable chemical which, if you was exposed to a group of people, 7 out of 10 of them are going to have a major psychological breakdown within a few minutes. For crowd control, there's a whole class that I mentioned before of these sedatives or calmatives, they're called in military jargon. One in particular that I'll point out is ketamine, which is a large animal tranquilizer, and also by some very crazy people used as a recreational drug. It's a really powerful hallucinogen that causes you to have sort of out-of-body experiences. The U.S. Army is funding the development of aerosolized, and if you're talking about biological weapons, if you're developing the capability to aerosolize it, that's sort of a real flashpoint, because if you're aerosolizing something, you're potentially creating the ability to distribute it in a room or in an environment. The U.S. Army is currently funding the development of aerosolized ketamine. Now this is going to be theoretically for the treatment of casualties in war. However, if I'm the Soviet Union, say, or if I'm Russia or a potential enemy of the United States, looking at the fact that the U.S. Army is funding the development of aerosolized ketamine, I'm probably going to react by saying that they're not just interested in treating casualties on the front. We'll get into the delivery mechanisms here in a minute, and that's the last part of the presentation. This right here is probably internationally significant, and this is from the 1999 annual report of the Pentagon Group that works on non-lethal weapons. This arguably violates the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention. This is an offensive war game, a simulation, in which they are simulating the use of calmatives and malodorants. Experiment to identify alternative means of offensive operations that will provide the National Command Authority and Joint Force Commanders additional operational options when executing a coercive campaign, right? So this is offensive wargaming, and it is using calmatives and malodorants. Anyway,
Just to talk a little bit about what exists now in terms of the delivery stuff, if you're talking about calmatives or you're talking about biologicals for crowd control, you go down to your local paintball place and a lot of the technology is there. Right now they use paintball guns equipment basically with the pepper gas or with pepper foam. This same sort of thing is being adopted for more overtly military uses. This is a M16 modified to fire various payloads, is how they call it, malodorants, markers, or whatever. These are things like non-lethal mortar rounds, two types of them here, frangible. They have frangible mortars and frangible bullets, and what that means is that it busts apart on impact and distributes a payload. This one right here, which we believe raises some pretty serious questions with respect to the Chemical Weapons Convention or Biological Weapons Convention, and these are the chemical mortar rounds that are designed to shoot up, and then when they come down, before they come down, they explode in the air. This is a picture of one of them exploding, and they spread whatever their payload is. That's being done by General Dynamics. They got the contract to develop these mortar rounds. As wild as it might seem, another way that they're seriously looking at being able to distribute these is from unmanned aerial vehicles, or in this case, sort of a mini cruise missile. This is like a general military weapon that would attack tanks and stuff like that if it was loaded with high explosives, but they're also looking at loading these with non-lethal payloads for attacking people. Finally, if you look at the pharmaceutical industry, the best example that we have now is this innovative drug delivery systems and West Pharma who are developing the transmucosal ketamine. It's the aerosolized ketamine. Its transmucosal was that it would pass through mucous membranes. And that wraps it up.
You heard a report on biowarfare and bioweapons by Ed Hammond, co-director of the Sunshine Project. He has worked on agriculture and genetic engineering since 1990. He also worked for Survival International, the coordinating body of the indigenous peoples' organizations of the Amazon Basin. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on bioweapons and biowarfare and a link to the Sunshine Project on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get a copy of the program on bioweapons and biowarfare by calling us. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Mariah Gelarden. Thank you for listening. We look forward to hearing from you.